This is Heather Vale Goss, also known as The Unwrapper, lead interviewer at LWL Worldwide, Inc., and today I'm speaking with Dr. Patrick Porter, an entrepreneur, award-winning author, and motivational speaker acknowledged as the undisputed leader in mind technology. He's the founder of Positive Changes, the world's largest franchise network of lifestyle improvement centers, and hosted the long-running Positive Changes radio and TV shows. He's devoted to developing empowering motivational and coaching methods to create lasting positive change in people's lives. His keynote speeches deliver the real-life nuts and bolts concepts he used to take his own business ventures to new heights, and he has personally instructed more than 35,000 people in self-help, neuro-linguistic programming, and psycholinguistics. He's the author of the award-winning bestseller, Awaken the Genius, Mind Technology for the 21st Century, as well as Discover the Language of the Mind, and the co-author of Six Secrets of Genius with his wife, Cynthia. He's also produced hundreds of audio-recorded motivational messages and creative visualization processes and has sold over 1 million products worldwide. His work has been featured on ABC, NBC, CBS, and the Discovery Channel, and in the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, People, Entrepreneur, and Inc. magazines. And today it's my turn. So Patrick, thank you so much for being here today to talk with us about attitude and the genius mind.
Oh, I appreciate being here.
Your book with your wife uses GENIUS as an acronym. What exactly does that stand for?
Well, the G stands for having a genuine positive attitude. And this kind of represents some people have a Pollyanna kind of attitude and that everything is positive. And that's not exactly what I'm talking about there. I'm talking about having a realistic view on the world and just making sure that everything happens for a good purpose is kind of our theme there. The E stands for enthusiasm, focus, and flexibility. And what geniuses have is they have a certain enthusiasm about what they do. They're focused by taking that energy. Instead of just being enthusiastic and being like a light that just shines all over the place, they want to be like a laser and move in the direction they want to go. But being flexible, and that's called, we kind of tell people to fail fast. If you're going to do something, test it, find out if it works or not for you in your life. And if it doesn't, change it. You can always go back to what doesn't work. And then the N stands for nonstop energy. You know, there's going to be times when naysayers and people out there are going to tell you, hey, this doesn't work, that you're stupid, you're wasting your time. And you've got to have that that energy that gets you up in the morning that says, hey, I'm going to do this regardless. And, you know, people will once ask me, are you a morning person or a night person? I say, I'm a morning-night person because I stay up late and I get up early. And my philosophy to people is when you're living your dream, you don't have to dream so much. And that's the key to being a genius. And then the I stands for imagination. You know, you have to imagine a world that you want to live in before you can actually get it. You know, and, you know, Napoleon Hill, who was one of my first mentors through book and audio, you know, basically put in my mind with my dad being a hypnotherapist that, you know, you have to see it in the inner world before you'll ever get it out here in the outer world. But most people lack imagination. They believe what everybody else tells them instead of focusing on what they really want and knowing that those opportunities show up in this field of energy that we call the world. And we first have to see it in this inner world and then allow the quantum physics of thought really to go about proving to us that we can have it. And the unending drive to succeed, which is the U part of genius, actually stands for knowing that failures are part of the equation, but to keep going. You know, the old philosophy and Chinese philosophy for success is fall down 3 times, get up 4. You know, and that's really what geniuses do. And then the S, actually that book was created when we were doing a book tour back in 1996. Our publisher said, you know, you need to have a book called Genius. I mean, you have to have a talk called Genius when you do this book tour. So my wife and I, traveling around in our RV for 2 years, had a lot of time on our hands in between talks. And what we did was we were sitting in a movie, and this is when Walter Matthau came out with that movie called IQ.
Okay.
And we couldn't figure out what the S should be in genius. And we're sitting there, and then right on the screen, Walter Matthau, as if he was talking directly to me, said, geniuses have something that normal people don't have. Now, I don't believe that. I think everyone has this potential. But in the movie, he says, what geniuses have is when their back's against the wall, when they don't see an outlet or a way to do something, they have what's called a spontaneous intuitive breakthrough. And really, so when you put those together, you have a genuine positive attitude, enthusiasm, focus, and flexibility. You have nonstop energy. You have imagination, unending drive to succeed. And when all of those don't work, you allow in that infinite field of possibility, which I like to tell people there is only an infinite number of possibilities from any one moment in time. And if they can stay focused on that, then it, instead of what most people out there who are negative thinkers, they think in an infinite number of ways to succeed, they will see the one way it'll fail, and they'll dwell on it. And they'll try to convince other people that failure is an option. And I like to think like the U.S. Marine Corps, failure is not an option. You just keep succeeding. Maybe you'll find ways it doesn't work, but you have to stay focused on what works. And that's really the kind of the scientific model that geniuses use to create the things we have in our world today.
I really like that. I've never heard an acronym like that, and it puts it all together. So are you saying that all of us can be geniuses?
Well, all of us are geniuses. The word genie actually is where it came from. And in Roman mythology, they talked about every person, every family, every city, every town, every country has a genie that watches over it. And if you believe in that genie and you use that genie, it houses your talents and skills, then others will call you a genius. That's really where that word came from. Now, of course, with our school systems, in the book Awaken the Genius, there's a lot about learning styles and teaching students how to become smarter. But the reality is that our schools are secret societies for what we would call visual learners. If you're a high math student or high math and science, then people think you're smarter than those drama kids or those art students. But the reality is in the world we live in today, there's a combination of being this right and left brain, and we all have certain talents. There's something, Heather, that you do, like this interview, for instance, interviewing people and creating information technologies. That's your genius, where somebody else might not have that genius, but you can bring your genius to the table with them and combine it with whatever they have, and that combined genius now becomes a higher order of thinking. And that's what I call genius, is just a higher order of thinking, seeing solutions when it looks like problems are all around you.
So not just thinking outside the box, but thinking above the box.
That's right. Yeah, well, in quantum physics, they say that we live in a field of infinite possibilities, and that actually nothing exists in the physical world, because there is no physical world in quantum physics. We take all of these waves and particles, and they're just in a super state, and when we get there, our perception creates the reality that there's an infinite number of those available to us. So if we all start to believe in that, then we can all have this infinite field, and we all start using this intelligence. There's something that's connecting us all. So we all have contact with that genius personality.
A lot of food for thought there, especially when we get into talking about quantum physics. Basically, you're saying that the box doesn't even exist that we're thinking outside of until we actually make that thought, and then all of a sudden the box exists in one form or another, depending on where we actually took that infinite possibility.
Yes, exactly. That's, with what's happening in Chicago, just for instance, they did a study on third-generation welfare families there. Mm-hmm. And these children are already being programmed by the grandparents and the parents that there's no possibilities for them. But then in the same way, there are children being brought up today that are told, hey, don't worry, in my house, what was really nice is my parents taught us that they're working hard, they're doing this so that we can have a better life. They always kept telling us that you can have it better than us because we're teaching you what we know. So it really has to do with how we bring up our children, how we speak and communicate with them, and really set the patterns in place. It's like programming a computer. We're kind of bound by our operating system that we're given, but now they know that you can actually reprogram that operating system through different technologies that are out there today.
Well, speaking of that, we've all been told that we get our belief systems, we get our programming, as you're calling it, when we're young children, and some of us would have had very aware parents that program the right things into our minds, and those of us that are parents are obviously trying to program our children for the best possible outcome as well. But for those that perhaps didn't have that programming and there's certain beliefs and certain stumbling blocks that end up in our psyche on a day-to-day basis, what kinds of technology are there out there that can actually help us to change those beliefs and move forward in the direction that we want to go?
Well, I think that there are several technologies that I can talk about, but the biggest thing you can do as a parent is not tell your children what to do, but teach them how to think. They're learning more by how you handle a problem than what you did to solve the problem. And what I like to tell people is, in my case, within what I do now with creative visualization and relaxation as one technology, is that I'm teaching people how to think, not what to think. The world is bombarding us every day with 50 to 60,000 messages every day telling us, you know, who we should vote for, what clothes we should wear, what television shows we should watch, you know, who's good, who's bad. And our brain is constantly bombarded, but the reality is that our consciousness interacts with questions and solving problems. So our psyche, if you will, is always looking at the world and saying, is this a good place? There's a place in our brain that scientists call the reticular activating system. And we all have this. And when we were, you know, being chased by saber-toothed tigers, of course, it was different than it is now, but it's always scanning our environment for things that are similar, that are safe, that are maybe troublesome to us. It's keeping us out of danger, and it's looking for odd and unusual situations. But it's also that part of us that has us either fight or flight situations. In our day now, it's more of an information game. So I think the biggest technologies that we have out there are what kind of technologies that can get our brain into a place where we can, let's say, elevate our thinking. Now, one of the ways that we do that is through light and sound technology, where we use flashing lights, what they call frequency following response, to guide somebody into a state of alpha and theta. Now, Virginia Hunt, who's a professor out here, I'm in the Northern California area, she's a professor at the University of California here in Berkeley, she did a study that showed that when people move into alpha and theta, that their energy, the energy that we have as individuals, actually expands. That means that you have more energy available. If you're in a state of beta, which is what I call the reactionary mind, the high left brain, then you lose energy. That's why if you're sitting around doing your taxes or trying to solve problems, you can be more tired than if you're out there playing tennis or doing something you enjoy physically, because the left brain has kind of robbed you of energy. But the right brain, when you're doing something you enjoy, actually brings energy into your system. And what she showed was that as we meditate or pray, getting into these altered states, we actually feed our body the energy that it needs, and this energy expands. She actually went so far as to prove that when you pray, you actually transfer energy from what you're saying mentally, you know, whether you speak it out loud or internally, that energy actually fills the food and changes the vibration of that food. So there's a lot of science out there that proves that if we can get into these altered states, these other, what I like to call other than conscious states, with awareness, whatever gets you there is not really the question. But if you can get there, now in our technology, what we've done is we've guided people through a cycle of sleep. And when you go through a cycle of sleep, your body naturally does a few wonderful things. One, it increases your serotonin levels. You know, today, in today's society, people are taking all these drugs to increase their serotonin or perception of increasing their serotonin, because most of the medicines don't actually do it. They just trick the brain into thinking that it's done it so that they don't have depression, but they don't really have a heightened sense of aliveness either. But what happens when you meditate or you use a good light and sound machine or you use some of these kind of different frequencies that are out there that can increase your capacity to stimulate the brain technology that's out there, your brain literally interacts with that information, whether it comes in sound or light or in verbal words, meditation through music, drumming. There's all sorts of technologies out there that move you, and everyone has to find what moves them. Once they find that place where they're in that place between what I like to say between the tick and tock of the clock, where timelessness happens, the body will actually do what it's supposed to do. It will sink into this moment in time with all of your resources. With your serotonin levels increase, your body will also get rid of excess adrenaline. There's a big movement out there in consciousness with people to create what's called anti-aging. Now, no one I know can actually do that. You know, I like to what Wayne Dyer says about that. He says, never let an old person inhabit your body. I think that's more important than anti-aging. You know, I've met some people who are 60 and 70-year-olds that have more going on, you know, as far as being alive than some 20-year-olds. You know, so the whole thing is to keep a young mind, and your body will be what your body is. I mean, we're meant to progress through age, unfortunately, in this reality, until somebody actually figures out this genetic code thing. But where we're at, if we can get into that place where we can get our body relaxed, get rid of excess adrenaline, increase our serotonin, you start using the most powerful pharmacy on earth, the human brain, it's able to release any number of 30,000 different neurochemicals. So if we can release those neurochemicals, let them flush down through our body and let us feel good, we'll make better decisions, better choices. And we don't have to react to situations. And that's what I was talking about earlier, when the biggest thing we can do for our children is to show them how we solve problems. You know, do we run out and get a bottle of alcohol to solve problems?
Right.
Or do we roll up our sleeves, do the work, and do it with a smile on our face? You know, and say, hey, you know, challenges are just opportunities for us to learn and grow and develop. That can't just be lip service that we hear on Sunday or something like that if we're going to a church service. It has to be something that our children see every day. You know, when Queen Elizabeth was asked, how do children learn? She said, well, like monkeys. You know, and they said, what do you mean? By their parents. You know, so, you know, we're just like monkeys. I mean, whatever our parents do, we're going to imitate. I was very fortunate that, in fact, one of the chapters of my book, I talk about how I was blessed to be the son of an alcoholic. And the reason I was blessed, where some alcoholics aren't, is my dad got help. So I got to see my dad get into learning about Silva, the Silva method, which is a method of using your mind and helping. And so when I was 12 years old, I got to make my very first recording of positive affirmations that my dad made me listen to every day. You know, when I was punished, I had to read books like As a Man Thinketh. You know, very different than the way some other kids are punished.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a big difference in the way. And even though my dad wasn't a saint, I don't think, you know, he's still got a lot of penance to do. But, you know, he at least was trying, you know, what he knew. He took all of us kids through our midlife crisis when we were, you know, 14 and 15 years old. Instead of when most people get into this consciousness awakening, you know, at 28 to 30 years old, when we start to realize that we're not immortal anymore.
Right. So I'm going to see if I can kind of nutshell a little bit of what you were talking about with the different brain frequencies, just so that I make sure that everyone's on the same page. It seems like you were saying that the technology that you use influences the brain to go into different brainwave states. And beta, you equated with the left brain, and that's kind of the awake state. And then alpha and theta are equated to some degree with the right brain, which is more the creative, meditative state. Is that correct?
Yes. Although you can be in a whole brain state, you can be in both sides at any one of these frequencies. But typically, beta being 13 and above, there's also some people believe there is a gamma brainwave rhythm above that. But just to keep it simple here, beta is where we have to operate in order to hopefully most of the time driving our cars and doing physical things that need our attention to detail. And what happens at that level is we have to react to information. We don't have time to really interact with it, because when we're interacting with it, we could get hurt. So this it's kind of the part where there's a book called Seeds of Greatness that was written by Dennis Waitley, where he talks about the subconscious mind, and he has a little riddle he has in there. He says, the subconscious mind, he says, I program my subconscious mind, but now my subconscious mind programs me. Well, that's when those behaviors show up in beta. When some people, you know, like the old commercial where the person's eating a sandwich and they go, I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
Right.
That's because of beta took over and said, this is the way we are. We have to clean our plates. Now, when you dip into alpha and theta, which can be done through light and sound technology, there's certain sound technologies that can take you there. There's certain drumming. There's certain meditation techniques. When you get into this alpha and theta place, there's no time. There's also no pain there. So people can experience pain-free dentistry, pain-free surgeries, stress-free childbirth, all of these things in that realm, because pain only happens in beta. And what they do, like our technology is actually being used in several hospitals across the country and medical clinics, because people are doing different medical procedures, especially with medical spas doing these laser treatments now that are just, they're so quick, it only takes 5 to 6 minutes. They don't give them any anesthetic, so they're very painful. But when they teach people to get into these other than conscious states, they don't have to feel pain. It's optional. And it doesn't take 30 years. You don't have to go to a mountaintop and, you know, meditate for 30 years to do this. You can get these zen-like states in a matter of a few visits on the equipment or through this training process.
Okay, so if we want relaxation, if we want meditation, if we want a pain-free state, we're looking at getting away from beta. But aren't there times when we might want to be in beta where we have to pay attention to the task at hand and be more aware of that?
Yes. I mean, definitely. If you're doing your taxes or you're actively engaged in a conversation, you want to have beta going. Anything that's going to take your awareness and interaction with the outside world, you want to have some degree of beta. In fact, Anne Wise, who's probably done the most brainwave research of anyone out there on the planet, she wrote a book called The Awakened Mind. And what she did was she took her biofeedback equipment, or mind mirror as it's called, and traveled around the world and actually put masters, these were masters of business, master meditators, throughout the world. Anyone who was, she would consider like a leader in their field, and she measured their brain in its optimum states, and she found out that no one brainwave pattern is better than any other.
Okay.
So it's some meditators, what happens, unfortunately, is some meditators create what's called a singular brainwave. And what happens there is their brainwave activity actually collapses into either alpha or theta. And if you start to do that too much, what happens is you don't know how to function in the real world. Have you ever heard the expression that some people are, their head's so high and the clouds are no earthly good?
Yeah.
You know, and that's because when you start to meditate, you can get this dull, lifeless kind of attitude because you feel so good, you feel so mellow that you don't have any engagement in the world because your beta brainwave has now been hampered. It's I kind of liken it to an athlete who is a weightlifter. If you constantly work on your upper body, but you've never worked on your legs, and we've all seen the guys at the beach or something, you know, they got this big upper body and they look really good, but then they got these little chicken legs.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to really balance out your mental system. That's why even today, one of the things in the Wall Street Journal just this past weekend, they had a great article in there that talked about brain gyms. And what they're talking about is these brain gyms are just active exercises. Like, even though it seems silly, like playing games like Scrabble or crossword puzzles or doing things that engage the left brain that are fun are going to keep your memory active. So you have to have this balance. It's not just about going to the mountaintop and meditating. That's not going to solve all the problems. You know, we also have to be in the real world to be able to function in the real world. So in my case, my technology, there needs to be an uptime experience that people need to find whatever works for them, whether that be working out of the gym, you know, finding some way to mentally stimulate themselves. But they also need a downtime experience. Because what happens is the brain, if somebody's just so... they're going all the time, especially in today's world. And the newest book that we've written, actually called Thrive and Overdrive, talks about this, that people, they want to keep going. They set goals. They want to achieve. And they feel like they're robbing themselves of 20 minutes if they sit down and do a meditation for 20 minutes because they should be doing some work. They should be reading a self-help book, listening to Zig Ziglar or whoever, you know, getting fired up instead of taking the time to go inside and really focus on their own mental capacity and working on their own, let's say, visualizing capacities. So there's got to be both. One is not better than the other, I wouldn't say. There needs to be balance in all things.
Right. Yeah, it's good to hear you say that because I know there's some teachers who teach that it's good to get into that kind of turning off the mind state is how they describe meditation, that you're kind of turning off your mind and letting the soul take over. And then there's other teachers who are all about the motivation and getting all pumped up. And students can kind of get stuck going too far one way or the other. But to hear you say that it's necessary to have that balance, I think it's really important. So I'm glad you made that point. Now, when you're talking about your light and sound therapy or your light and sound technology, what exactly is it?
what we have is, in our machine, we call it the Zen Frame, and it's four different technologies actually working together. One is the frequency following response using LED lights, so your eyes are closed. The only people that can't use that, of course, if somebody's epileptic or if they're light sensitive, they wouldn't want to use that. And if they don't have it yet in their life, then they probably don't have it, because it would actually be triggered by going down a wooded street where the light might flicker in, you know, as you're driving down the road and you're going through the trees. Mm-hmm. That would cause somebody to maybe get nauseous or have an upset stomach. But 99.9% of the people that get on the equipment really like it. And there's a science out there about light, and there's a lot of research out there, and light is really positive. Then we have a sound portion of what we do, and there's two different versions of sound therapy in ours. One is brain entrainment through different frequencies that we have embedded into our programs that cause the body to go into a state of alpha and theta. The other is a beat frequency response called binaural beats that triggers the brain to go from a state of being wide awake, and these are synchronized with the lights. So together with the light and sound, it's going to guide somebody through a cycle of sleep. Now, if it's a 10-minute program that we have, it's going to be a very light sleep, but it's only going to take them into high alpha. If it's a 22-minute session, which is our typical length of session, then it's going to take them down into the deeper realms of theta, almost into delta. We don't do any programming in delta. I know there are some frequencies out there that do work in the delta range, but our machine doesn't. It's going to take them through a natural cycle of sleep and then bring them back out and bring them on an up cycle. Now, we also have different music in ours. Now, our music, our machine, actually, we just made an arrangement with Stephen Halperin. All of his music, we're converting it over to be Zen Frame compatible, which means somebody can buy the special tracks that we're going to encode, and they can listen to his beautiful music in the background and just do a meditation, because sometimes people don't want to hear any voice. They just want to do their own thing, which is great. And Stephen Halperin has really good music for that, so we're mixing his music and putting those together. Now, in my case, I have the music in the background, plus my voice being a guided imagery process. Now, within this guided imagery, I'm going to take them on different metaphors and different journeys to awaken their mind's potential. And then we have even a fifth level of training, because our voice comes in two different styles. One is a single voice style, like most people would hear about through guided imagery, meditation, or hypnosis. And then we have another, which is based on my training in neurolinguistic programming. Back in the 80s, I took training with Bandler and Grinder, who are the founders of NLP, and I learned how to give suggestions a little bit differently through, and also trained with Milton Erickson's group, the Ericksonian style. And what we do is we give a suggestion to the right brain, and then we give a suggestion to the left brain. And this synchronizes back and forth while the single voice is going down the middle. So we call this dual induction. And it's most of our clients over the years at our franchise locations, once they hear that, they never want to hear the single voice again, because they get such a unique altered experience doing that. Now, not all of our programs are done in the dual voice induction, but most of them are. So we have all those different technologies happening at once. And because of the science of electronics right now, we could put that all into one system. Now, if someone were to just download my session without the Zen Frame part of it, everything is encoded actually into the MP3 file. So they can get all the benefits except the light frequency response without the Zen Frames, because some people can't use the Zen Frames anyway. So we made it available without that as well. So there's all those different options that go into it. And what we find is that there's two kind of ways to get somebody into an altered state. One is deprivation, and I'm sure that you and most of your listeners have probably heard of the deprivation tanks where you meditate in salt water.
Yeah.
And I love those. I think they're really great, but the problem is that most people don't know what to think while they're in there. So they can actually go a little crazy because they didn't realize what they've been saying to themselves all the time. But I do think everyone should have that experience. So that's one experience. The other is called sensory overload. Now, in today's world, we live in a world, a sea, in fact, of sensory overload. We're being bombarded all the time. And what happens is our brain gets fatigued because it can't operate on that level. So what our training does is actually gets the brain to actually operate at a higher level and gets the brain to work in harmony, getting both right and left hemisphere to work together. So when somebody returns back to their everyday world, the world seems to operate a little bit slower pace. Information doesn't seem to be so mind-boggling, and they've learned how to sort, organize, and then use information at a much greater rate because they've trained their brain through these different modalities during this 20-minute little mini vacation. And most people will awaken from that 20 minutes as if they've slept for 4 hours because they've imitated a cycle of sleep during that 20 minutes.
Hmm. The first time you mentioned the length of the average program, you said, I think it was 22 minutes.
Yes.
And what comes to mind when you say 22 minutes is that's the length of a 30-minute TV program, if you take away the commercials. It's 22 minutes plus 8 minutes of commercials. Is there a reason why 22 minutes is optimal for both TV shows and for this kind of experience?
Well, yeah, I think it has to do with the length of time that the average person can stay focused. And that we actually found out of the time because at Positive Changes, we'd actually see 160 people a day. And so when some people say they've seen clients, I mean, we used to see over 100,000 people a week through all the locations of Positive Changes. So what we did is we started off with 40-minute sessions. And what we found out through the feedback of our clients, because we already said the only result we really care about is the results of our clients. It doesn't matter what I think, doesn't matter what my wife thinks, it doesn't matter what any of our partners think. What really matters is, does the end result happen for our client? And so our clients were saying that was too long for them. They got fatigued, you know, when they're laying there listening at about 30 minutes. So we went to a 30-minute program. Well, we found out we still had a good number of people being fatigued. What I mean by fatigued is they would wake up after about 25 minutes and they're waiting and they're getting anxious about it being over instead of enjoying the process. It's kind of like being on a long trip and you know that you're going to see grandma or whatever, but you're not there yet, so you're getting anxious and more anxious. So what we found out was between 20 and 22 minutes, people seem to go in and out of that state of sleep and have the best experience. And back in 1997, we made that discovery, and so I've tried to keep everything I've done. That's why, like in our weight loss series, we have 52 weight loss programs, because in a 22-minute educational period, like if I want to help somebody through how to overcome self-sabotage, excuse me, I can do that only in 22 minutes. But I can't add another little piece to it. So everything is chunked and sequenced into small chunks that they can digest in one visit, and then they can go back and do the other. So we have a sequence of trainings instead of trying to get it all into one CD, in other words.
Right. So let's take weight loss as an example, because I'm sure it's something that is appealing to a lot of people. So first of all, how many times would they listen to the one 22-minute program? And secondly, how many of those other 52 programs would they need to implement as well?
Well, what we've done research in our studies show that the average person loses just under a pound a week doing the visualization program. So that means if somebody were to need to lose over 30 pounds, they're probably going to need, you know, 30 weeks. And each one is a little bit different. So, for instance, let's say that somebody has a problem with sugar and chocolate addiction, so they might listen to that one. They can pick and choose what they need out of that series. But during a normal week, we recommend they at least listen twice a week as a minimum. But the best would be if somebody were to do a program to listen once a day. You know, if you could get on the equipment and or listen to the programs once a day, you're going to start maintenancing your mind. And instead of at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon when you'd be running out to get a latte or something, it's better to go ahead and set aside 20 minutes and, you know, feed your brain some positive information instead of just feeding your body a stimulant. So that's kind of where we're at. And we have a whole system. The system is based on the book, The Language of the Mind. So I have a system that teaches people how to think. So the first 13, which would be 12 weeks, is kind of gets them into gear, what they do. Now, the locations, we have what we call site licenses out there. People who use this in their business, they usually have the people come in once or twice a week, and they still get good results with it. But if somebody has it at home, you might as well use it every day.
Right. So if, for instance, losing 30 pounds and taking 30 weeks, would that be one recording per week and then 30 different recordings? Or is that the same one, like the chocolate addiction for 30 weeks?
No, the first one that you said, it's the same recording for a week.
Okay.
So in what happens is you master that one technique. Like, let's say the weight loss one, safely accelerate your weight loss. That's the first one for weight loss. So what that's going to do, it's going to set up your thinking so that you understand that you want permanent weight loss, not fast weight loss. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways to lose weight that are fast, but they're not real healthy for your body. So we want to get them focused on doing what is necessary to build healthy lifestyle changes. And then the second one is simple steps to self-confidence and weight control, because part of it is just being confident within yourself. So you go through each one. Each one is a different lesson that's going to teach you along the way.
Okay, so then at the end of the 30 weeks, is it kind of ingrained in the subconscious, or is it something we might have to revisit again in the future?
Well, what I've been asked a lot over the years, if this is addictive or if you need to do it the rest of your life, and I always tell people, you know, if you found something that worked and made you feel good, why wouldn't you do it the rest of your life? And then I kind of jokingly say, you know, I don't know if it's addictive, but I've been doing it since 1986. Hmm. You know, so it's one of those things that you have to maintenance your mind. It's it's like asking somebody who is a forester if they need to sharpen their axe. You know, if you use it, yeah. So if you plan on using your brain and not being just a robot to the outside influences, then you've got to take time to maintenance your mind and make sure that you're in control of what you're thinking and eating.
Okay. Earlier on, you mentioned that we can get meditative benefits either obviously from meditating the old school way or from using a light and sound machine or even just the sound portion of mm-hmm. the light and sound system. Now, some people, when they meditate, of course, have that same problem that you mentioned with the sensory deprivation unit, which is, you know, the mind says, oh my God, and kind of freaks out and wants to think of all these different things and starts racing around like crazy. Would we get equal results if we could meditate properly on our own as using your technology? Or does the technology kind of give a boost to no matter how good meditators we happen to be in the first place?
Right. Well, one thing is that unless somebody is really, really practiced, they're not going to get to the levels that some of this technology out there can get you to. You might get there automatically, but like they did studies with Swami Rama in the Meninger Clinic. And what they found out was that he would go in and out of these cycles himself, and he could control where he goes. But here's somebody who has been meditating for 30 years with a scientific way and approach and spends, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day in meditation, where you take the average American who's spending three or four hours a day watching television. You know, so they're used to being, taking their information in small pieces and chunks in there. They don't really have attention deficit. They've just never trained their attention. So you can do it on your own if you practice. The key to meditation on your own is not to be too judgmental and let thoughts flow. You know, most people think they're supposed to be in this no-thought state where if you're not thinking, you're probably dead, you know, so you have to think, and so you let those thoughts flow, but most of them have a science or what they call a kriya, some way, something to focus on. So what these machines are in the yogic state, they would call them laya yoga or union with the mind. So you would use these different sciences, whether it be sound, light, music. These are all ways to get the mind into a harmonious state within itself, to get the mind in balance. And once you do that, and I think that depending upon a person's preferences, there's been no one that we have researched, and we've put literally probably 10,000 people on biofeedback equipment and measuring devices, that we have found that we're able to sustain theta for more than just a brief blip on a scale. They could stay in alpha, which is, you know, most people think that if they buy a binaural beat tape, something like that, like there's a big movement of that out there right now.
Yeah.
But we've not found anyone, even though the binaural beat might say that they're going to take them to theta, we have not been able to get anyone to go into theta on their own without the use of light and sound, and or without a kinesthetic. There's some people that use these beds, and they're really good too. You lay on these like massage beds, and they have transducers in them, and so you could actually have a kinesthetic portion to this too. I don't have that, but I know that it does work as well. But you have to have two of your senses in there, so it kind of works like being on an elevator, and you hear your favorite music, but you didn't really know it was until you're there for a little bit, and they've changed it to Muzak.
Right.
And then the words start forming in your head.
Yeah.
That's because your brain, once it has at least two pieces of that sensory information, it'll add in the third. It does it automatically. It doesn't even take any will or conscious thought. So in the process of doing this with light and sound, what happens is the brain then makes the next step happen, and the person who is the observer or the meditator doesn't have to consciously work on doing that. It just happens for them. Where when you're there by yourself and you're doing your meditation, you know, if you're a practiced or seasoned meditator, let's say you're a yoga instructor or somebody like that, you have your own method, you might enjoy doing that. So the light and sound will give you a different experience, whether that's good or bad, but we've not been able to, even with people who are heavy-duty meditators, see anybody who could stay in the theta state as long as with the light and sound equipment. And we do know that 100% of the people that we have put on the equipment after three visits, when the machine is guiding them through these different cycles, and the key is not to keep them in any one frequency for any period of time, because once the brain gets a frequency for any period of time, it then cancels it out as just ambient noise, and it will not focus on it anymore. So the frequencies have to continuously change, guiding somebody in and out of alpha, for instance, down into theta, in, let's say, between 4 and 7 cycles per second. It will keep exercising that up and down, right and left. It never stops through the whole sequence. As soon as it stops and stays there for any period of time, the brain will just say, oh, okay, that's just part of the room noise. I don't need to focus on that anymore. What else is going on out here? So for someone to do that on their own, they'd have to be very, you know, they'd have to be a very serious meditator and have a great deal of focus and concentration.
Yeah, and that no thought zone that you mentioned, I find becomes a trap a lot of the times for people, because they're thinking, okay, I'm not allowed to think, I'm not allowed to think, I'm not allowed to think, and then of course they're thinking while they're thinking that thought, and they kind of spiral into this, oh my God, I'm doing it all wrong, and they end up not actually achieving what they should be achieving when they're meditating.
Right. I think that's why the big movement in the medical community, because they seem to be the last ones to jump on board, there's a big movement called mindfulness. And really, mindfulness is basically taking whatever comes into your mind and allowing it to fill your mind and letting that flow like a river and just keep letting it flow, because most people don't understand your everyday life is what you're supposed to be learning. And until you take care of your physical world, you don't really get access, because we're not physical beings trying to be spiritual. We're spiritual beings in a physical experience. So this is what we're supposed to learn. And if we don't learn from it, it keeps trying to replay itself. So learn from your relationships, learn from your communication, learn from your interactions with others. And those are the spiritual lessons. And then when you meditate on them, how are you interacting with them? How are they making you feel? How are you moving forward? How is that feeding your soul? So that when you wake up tomorrow morning, you realize, hey, I'm in the right place. I'm in the right time period, or whatever you need to feel, so that you understand that all is right in your universe. And as long as you deny that, then it'll keep trying to show up again. It'll show up in your dreams. It'll show up in your life. It'll show up in your books that you read. It'll show up everywhere.
I find that people not only often have a problem with meditating and not being sure exactly what they're supposed to be doing while they're meditating, but they also tend to have a problem with visualization, and they say things like, I can't see the pictures, or it's not working for me. But what I find with the guided imagery that's on your recordings is it kind of overcomes both of those, and it helps through the meditation process. So it's not just the mind wandering all over the place and flowing where it's going to flow and then second-guessing what's happening, or trying to see the movie picture while visualizing and, again, second-guessing what's happening, but it's actually being guided. And I find for me that that tool works rather well. And I was wondering if you've heard from other people whether that voice-guided imagery is a key component or not.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that that is key for, there's a small group out there that just doesn't want to hear anybody talk, you know, and that's fine too. So, but most people, they want that guided imagery so that they, their mind, I tell people the mind is like a wild horse. Wherever you want it to go, it's going to try to go the other way.
Right.
So that's where the nice part about learning the NLP helped me, is that by using the right kind of language, which is not totally old school hypnosis like my dad taught me in, you know, in the 70s, but learning a little bit more of passive language and getting people to use their own memories. And through, there's a statement, the question is the answer. And so a lot of times when you go through and listen to mine, I'm asking a lot of questions during the guided imagery. And those questions actually precipitate the person visualizing, because in order for them to form a response, they have to picture it. So they don't really realize that I'm asking questions, because the way that I'm asking, I'm guiding them, is not just telling them what they're seeing or hearing. I'm giving them multiple choices a lot, too. Mm. Where, you know, some guided imagery, you know, they want you to see specifically this or that, and then that locks people out of that field of possibility.
Right. You mentioned that NLP relies on our own memory as opposed to old school hypnosis. What other differences are there between an NLP induction and what we might typically associate with being hypnotized?
Well, I think the main thing is that in most people, and there's a lot of different hypnosis, so I don't want to offend any hypnotist out there, but in most hypnotists have a direct approach. Like, they tell you exactly what to do, and they believe the subconscious should follow you there. And there is, for 10% of the population, they're called somnambulistics or sleepwalkers, and they will follow that kind of suggestion. Like, in my early days, I used to do stage shows, and I worked with a mentalist called named Gil Gilly out of Vegas, and we did a lot of shows, and it was a lot of fun, but that's not serious stuff. But we were always looking for those somnambulistics, those sleepwalkers for those shows. So you had to have a big group. You know, you had to have at least 100 people to get 10 people.
Right.
Well, if you're trying to help the masses, you can't just design. That's why some people believe, they go, I can't be hypnotized. I can't be. Well, no, you can't be hypnotized like that. But you can. Every one of us is hypnotized all the time. Most people don't understand the word transformation. You know, they're going to these seminars saying, I want a transformation. I want a transformation. Well, what that word means is that we're in a trance right now, and we want another trance, and we want another trance, and we want a formation of trances that takes us from where we are now to where we want to be. And if we get those trances to form right, then we get this enlightened experience. But the unconscious language there is that we're in a trance right now. Like right now, I'm in an interviewing trance. You know, you're in an interviewer trance. You know, and when we leave, hopefully we'll leave in a better trance, you know, because we had this communication. But, you know, we have trances when we're around family members. You know, we might, if we're at church, we might have a different vocabulary even than we're on the golf course or something like that. You know, so people have different, you know, there's different ways of thinking about it. So when you think about, with NLP, what it does is it uses a very open frame. Now, NLP learned most of its language from a hypnotist named Milton Erickson. But Erickson used a lot of conversational hypnosis, which most old school hypnotists would not consider hypnosis. You know, they believe, okay, there's a trance, there's an induction stage, there's a suggestion stage, and then there's an exit stage or whatever. They have these formulas that they have, but the reality is that everything is hypnosis. We're always in a trance. So what an NLP practitioner typically knows, and there are a number of hypnotists that are actually NLP practitioners, they know that in order to change somebody's trance, we have to engage in the trance they're in right now and then pace and lead them to the trance that they want. So it could be they're in a trance of denial about their addictions, let's say. So we're going to guide them into a trance of expanded consciousness where they can see possibilities beyond using whatever substance it is. So there's different ways of thinking and acting, and I think that When we use what we do, we don't even call it hypnosis. We don't call it NLP. We just call it guided imagery, guided visualization, or creative visualization and relaxation, because we're asking, I don't care what it is, as long as the person, the end result is that they get what we want. You know, when somebody reads the titles to each of my processes, like Create Your Enchanted Forest, let's say for stress reduction, I want them to create this space where they can go and take a 20-minute mental vacation. And all they have to do then is put that on, whether they're using the Zen frames or their own creativity to get there. They listen to it, all of that background noise that's happening. Some of it is conscious, they can hear it. Some of it they can't, but their brain is hearing it all. It takes them from where they are now to this inner space and gives them this timeless space that allows them to return back to their world refreshed. That's really what we're looking for in our processes.
As you had mentioned before, brainwave entrainment is kind of trendy these days. There's a lot of tapes out there that do brainwave entrainment. And from my understanding from what you're saying, there's the light portion of the brainwave entrainment, which is done with the LED flashes, and then there's the sound portion of brainwave entrainment. And you mentioned that your technology uses binaural beats. Now, I've also heard of monaural beats and isochronic tones. So what are the differences between those technologies and kind of the pros and cons?
Well, I wish I could tell you I was a pro about those others, but I'm not. But what I have researched, my own research has shown that there probably isn't that much difference, and it's just that what somebody might experience. Mm-hmm. There might be some people might have a better experience with one over the other. With the isochronic tones, you can use them in an open room. So one of the limitations to using binaural beats is you have to use earphones. So if you have a mono source, you could actually listen to it in a home stereo or actually have a group meeting, and everyone in that meeting could be experiencing the same thing at the same time. Now, what we did at our locations is we had a room that had 14 recliners, and, of course, everyone in the recliner had their own earphones. Binaural beats have been, you know, well-researched, I mean, over the years. And the downside to binaural, if there is a downside, is if somebody is deaf, then obviously binaurals aren't going to work, because let's say I wanted to get 10 hertz frequency, I'd put a 200 hertz frequency in one ear and a 210 hertz frequency in the other. Your brain literally would sync the difference. Now, what binaurals are doing is actually something our brain does all the time, which is it syncs with its environment all the time. So if we were to go down to the ocean and sit by the ocean and we go, man, we're relaxed, well, that's because the ocean is actually functioning at about 10 cycles per second. So our body actually working as a biofeedback system feeds back with its environment, says, wow, I'm here. Now, if we go into the city, like if we go to New York City and we go, I don't like it here, I'm all nervous and upset. In fact, one of my partners at one of the last shows, she has a horse farm. And she had to leave New York early because she said she was so nervous and anxious because she was used to going out and being out in nature and, you know, operating at 10 cycles. There's actually a frequency in the earth which is called the Schumann frequency. It used to be 7.4 hertz frequency, but over the last 20 years, for some reason, which if you're into metaphysics at all, you know, they say we're speeding up, and they actually have evidence of it. In the book called The Crystal Planet by Dr. Jockman, he talks about the Schumann frequency and how it's measured, but the Schumann frequency is now about 9.4 hertz frequency. So that means that's the frequency of the planet itself. So our body's always doing that. So the binaural beats do it through two different frequencies in the ears. The mono, or the isochronic tones, will do this. I also have a friend that has who holds a patent on what's called mentor waves. And he has a patent that he knows the frequency of different emotions that trigger in the brain. And there's certain frequencies. Everything in life is frequencies. So there probably is something being created today that will be even much better than what I have. And hopefully I'll learn about it and be able to incorporate it, because there's so many great things out there. Right now there's a revolution, actually, of consciousness and people wanting to open themselves up to these other possibilities. And whether it happens through isochronic tones, binaural beats, music, drumming, our nature is, we've been doing this since the dawn of creation. I mean, You know, you think about the shamans and how they would use drumming. They were really doing the same thing to get people into these altered states.
Yeah.
So now with science, we can figure it out and really move it to that next level.
And replicate it, yeah. Now, what's really interesting is we're talking about these multisensory processes, and you brought up an interesting point when you said about someone being deaf and not really being able to hear the audio portion of this. So what kind of results could they get from just using the light portion and not the audio?
Well, in my book, Awaken the Genius, I kind of talk about the light and how that works, because there's a whole science out there of people that just sell the lights. They don't even put any sound with it. And, of course, they believe that you don't need the sound, that the sound is harmful and all of this. In fact, Jim, the guy I was just talking about, he actually didn't want to use my sound, my light portion, because he was just into the sound portion.
Huh.
But he was very ill in the hospital here just 3 months ago, and a friend of mine, Jerry DeShazo, brought him a piece of equipment because he couldn't get out of pain. And I said, put him on, because we know that when somebody gets into alpha and theta, they cannot feel pain. I said, just have Jim listen to it, because I know Jim, and we're, even though he didn't quite agree with everything that I have, and I don't quite agree with everything he believes in, we're still friends. You know how that works.
Yeah.
See? But he started using it, and now we're trying to figure out how we can get his mentor waves, is what he calls them, into our equipment. Because if I could do away with the binaural beats and get the same effect, I'd be all for it. In fact, you know, I've just here recently found out about isochronic tone, so I'm going to be researching that more. You know, I want to use whatever works, whatever's going to bring the end user the best experience. And that's
right.
Really the secret here is to always be evolving. I mean, what we used back in 1986 obviously has to be improved upon in, 2010.
Yeah, yeah. I take it also that with the dual induction that you talked about, those would require stereo headphones as well, wouldn't they?
Yes, but some people will listen to them in their home with their stereo.
Okay.
But if you don't have the speakers separated, it'll sound just crazy. You can't listen to it in mono. You know, it just sounds like a voice is on top of the other.
Right. Okay.
And we have some people, if you're the type of person that doesn't like to go to the mall shopping, you probably won't like the dual voice.
Mm.
You know,
okay.
There are some people that, you know, if you say, we're going to the mall, they go, oh, no, I'm staying home. They're going to like the single voice. You know, so because it adds, it's called a confusion technique. And one of the things that I learned over the years from different masters that I've trained with, especially in yoga and in meditation, is that confusion is the deepest trance and the quickest road to enlightenment. So we have to get people into a little bit of confusion so that they start questioning their current state, wherever they're at, so they can be open to another one. Because if their best thinking brought them to where they are right now, and if they want to go to that next step, they need to get some new thinking in there. Just like if you want your computer to run fast, you might have to get new memory or a new software program, something to improve its capacity to operate.
Okay. Now, the light portion of the Zen frames, from my understanding, is kind of like a pair of sunglasses that you put on that has the lights inside. Is that how it works?
Yes. You put them on just like sunglasses, and the reason for that is they need to be just like the earphones. They work on a frequency response. The one eye is just a little bit different than the other, so you get these, it's almost like binaural beats, if you will, but it's using the light frequency. But with the light, they could be flashing at the same time, and you still get the same effect. So it's not like there's these different sciences that show, that you have to have them flashing differently or the same. What we do by flashing them differently is we might activate more of the right brain during one portion of the exercise, more of the left brain on another, and then get them both to flash at the same time.
Hmm.
So it's doing different brain activities. And this all comes from actually what's called a Jyoti meditation, which is a candle meditation. The flickering of a candle, the Angstrom light unit, which is the unit of light, how they measure light, on the LEDs that we use is the same as the light unit of a candle. So it's not like it's intense. You know, it's just enough to get this, what we call the optic nerve, to fire and say, hey, there's something going on there. And then the brain activates, and it's doing it in the same way that a candle would.
Okay. Now, a candlelight, of course, I typically think of it being orange, and your technology uses blue LEDs, which are completely the opposite on the color spectrum from orange. So why the blue LEDs?
Well, we use blue because nobody has an ab reaction to them. There are red lights out there and white lights and amber lights. And with the eyes closed, it really doesn't matter what the color of the light is because we're not using, like there are some therapies that use different colors. Christopher Hill actually used a machine that used full spectrum light. And that would probably be best if you had that, but we don't have that ability, that capacity to do it. Blue just happens to be, 4 years ago, they came out with blue LEDs. And blue LEDs are the safest to use in this application. So that's why we use them. And most people, we call them cool blue because most people have a cooling or calming effect when they listen to them. But that's all subjective. I mean, your eyes are closed, so you're not really looking at a blue light. You're just seeing flashing.
Okay. One interesting thing I noticed when listening to your audios as opposed to other brainwave entrainment audios I've listened to is I didn't consciously hear the beats. I heard the music, I heard the guided imagery, and I know that the beats were there, but I didn't consciously hear them. So how exactly does it work with the brain if on the conscious level it's like they don't even exist?
Well, you have to hear them in order for your brain to interact with them, but it doesn't have to be first attention. First attention, we like to put the music. Now, I have the beat frequencies are a little bit louder on the dual voice, and the reason for that is everybody has a little bit different taste, if you will. You know, some people would like to turn it all the way off and never hear the binaural beats at all because it just bugs them. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, and if you're consciously being bugged, I don't care what anybody tells you about the technology, it's not doing any good because your energetic state, the emotional state that you have, plays more into how you get results than anything else.
Right.
So if energetically, if you don't feel like you're getting a good program, let's say, or a good experience, then it's not going to work. So what we found out was that was done through testing with, you know, thousands of people, what level, where they would still interact. And the way we know that it's still working is we would put people on the machine with an EEG machine hooked up at the same time, and we knew at 7 minutes they were going to be at 9 hertz frequency, and then here's everybody at 9 hertz frequency. And then when it took them back up through the cycles, they would follow directly with it. And even though they didn't consciously know anything was happening, because the brain literally is learning without your conscious awareness all the time. So the brain is picking up that all the time. And because the music is layered in with it, you don't really hear it. But if you were to listen to one of the double voice or dual induction programs we have, the sound frequency is just a little bit higher and it's a little bit more pronounced because people who enjoy the dual induction like to have a little bit louder. So we encoded that a little bit higher on those.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that this is safe for pretty much anybody except someone who has a history of epileptic seizures. So pretty much anyone who's listening can make use of this technology?
Yes, as long as they can listen to music, they're going to be all right.
Now, of course, everybody's looking for the magic pill all the time. They want something that they can just turn on or take, and it's going to bring them magical results. And since this happens a lot on the subconscious level, it almost seems like it is a magical result. Do you think it's about as close as we get to that magic pill?
Well, right now, I don't know of anything better in this technology. I always tell people there's only two things that can happen, which is very good when you're doing something like using the creative visualization programs, is one, you're going to fall asleep and get a good nap, or two, you're going to wake up and your life's going to change. So there's really no negatives. You're feeding your brain with positive information, and you're getting even just taking a nap. There's a lot of research out there that shows just taking a 20-minute cat nap is going to help you. So the side effects, or what we call the side benefits, are so great that even if you don't make the change specifically that's mentioned on the program, you're still getting a really positive result.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, some people fall asleep when they listen to recordings like this. Does it still work if you do fall asleep?
Yes, actually, it takes 40 minutes on average for people to go into a state of delta, which for what we're teaching, Delta, there's no programming that happens there. You're unconscious. So in order for them to go into Delta, now the way they know they didn't really fall asleep is they come back at the end of the program. So if they don't come back at the end of the program, then they probably really did fall asleep. But in 99% of the cases, they come back at the end and they go, wow, all I heard was, hello, this is Dr. Patrick Porter, and eyes open, wide awake, what just happened? And what happened was they went into a state of theta. In that state of theta, it's like if I was an alien and I was to abduct you and take you into a foreign world that you'd never been before, because you couldn't really see it, like in the movie What the Bleep?
Yeah.
When they talked about when the Spaniards came, the Indians couldn't see the ships out in the harbor.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's what's happening to people. They're in this other world, and they haven't built their perceptual filters there, so they don't remember it because they have no way to contextualize it. But as they go there more and more often, what's going to happen is they're going to build their... Every one of us is born clairvoyant. We're born clairaudient. We're born clairsentient. We just haven't used those tools. We haven't used those capacities of our mind. So what happens when we meditate and we go to these altered states, whether they use the Zen frames or they just do this on their own or they use isochronic tones or binaural beats, whatever it is, they're going to an altered state. And they just have to learn to use those mental muscles, and then they'll have a memory of being there.
I mentioned at the beginning that you had sold over 1 million products worldwide, and the new one is called 90% Attitude, which for anybody listening, that's available at lwlurl.com/Porter, Dr. Porter's last name, lwlurl.com/Porter, which is P-O-R-T-E-R. Patrick, what is this new product, 90% Attitude, all about?
Well, what we're focusing on, because of the World Wide Web and people out there getting into this new business of marketing on the Internet, which isn't new, of course, to some people. They've been doing it now for 10 years. But one of our partners, Stephanie and Greg Mulak, they came to me and they said, hey, look, we know a lot of marketers. We coach them, and we can get them the mechanics, but we can't get their mindset. And one thing is, especially thinking from a quantum perspective, it doesn't matter if you have the greatest business plan in the world. If you believe as a business owner that it's not going to work, it's not going to work because your thinking actually from this unseen world manifests everything into the seen world. So this is about keeping you focused, not really teaching you how to be an Internet marketer, but how to think like an Internet marketer, how to think like somebody who's an entrepreneur, because an entrepreneur thinks differently than somebody who goes out and gets a job and punches a time clock. So with 90% Attitude, I know in life, if my wife was once to ask, you know, does Patrick ever get depressed or down? And she says, well, I've known him for 20 years. I don't think so. But I've had a lot of bad things happen to me, but I can either choose to focus on those bad things, or I can say, hey, those are learning experiences, and I can, you know, do my best to avoid them, but I want to focus on what's going to make me money or it's going to help people or move my career forward right now. I'm not going to focus on all these negatives. And also 90% Attitude is focusing, the first phase of 90% Attitude is just focusing on building your own internal support team, because there's a lot of naysayers out there, especially when you go to be in business for yourself. People are going to say, why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
And my whole point over the years, somebody said, why don't you go get a job? Because I worked for a while with the Arizona Health Council as a counselor working with suicidal teens and pregnant teens. And that's a pretty depressing job. I mean, somebody has to do it, I know, but I'm thinking, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. I want to do something where, you know, when you change somebody's life and make it more positive, just like a marketer, as an Internet marketer, if you can teach somebody how to market that what they feel is their pride and joy and they start making money off it, there's a lot of joy in doing that. But there's a step that has to be taken between there. Your thinking has to change. I never think of myself as self-employed. Now, I think of myself as infinitely employed. I can work for anybody I want, whenever I want to, because I don't punch a time clock. But somebody who goes in and punches a time clock, they think they're employed. But the reality is, especially in this down economy, you know, at any moment, somebody could just say, we don't need your job anymore. You're totally relying on somebody else for your income. So an entrepreneur goes, No, I want to be available to everyone at any one time. And the internet now makes that so. I mean, I went to work. I do some work with a university called Quantum University. That's with Goswami, who was in What the Bleep. He's one of the professors there, too. And we teach courses in 40 different countries. And we do it all online. I go there and I teach a course once. They sell it all over the world. I mean, it's incredible what the internet can do, and I believe that just like writing a book, I think there's a book inside of everyone. It's just how do you get that book out? And just like I think there's an entrepreneur inside of everyone, it's just how do you get that out without somebody having what Michael Gerber says, an entrepreneur seizure. You know, in his book, E-Book, he talks about how people have this almost like a brain fart, if you will. They have this idea, but then they don't realize it takes some action steps to do it, and it takes a change in philosophy. So 90% attitude is all about changing your mindset, changing your philosophy, so you can stay on task, on target, do what needs to be done to do all of the background work so that you can be the best internet marketer possible. And that's what that whole program is about.
Infinitely employed. I love that. That's going to be a new buzz phrase around here. And like you mentioned, internet marketing is a wonderful way to leverage ourselves. You do the work once and you benefit from it over and over and over again. So even people listening that never thought about getting into internet marketing, it's a great thing to get into if you do want to have that leverage in your life and do what you love and have the money follow. And the really important thing that you mentioned, Patrick, is learning how to think like an internet marketer, because there's a lot of people out there teaching what I call the physical, real world, hands-on techniques. And then on the other side of the physical coin, we've got the metaphysical stuff, which is the inner world things that we've been talking about in this call. And it's really important, I think, to have that balance between the inner and outer world if you're going to be a well-rounded success in anything. So I really applaud this program that you've put together. Really excited about 90% attitude myself. And again, for anyone listening, that's lwlurl.com/porter. So Patrick, we've been talking for well over an hour here and a lot of really fascinating stuff that we've gone into during the course of this interview. And I'm just wondering before we leave everyone, if there's anything that you feel was important to mention that you would like to leave them with, kind of any parting little words of wisdom for the listeners.
Well, I think if they can just remember the one phrase that there's only an infinite number of possibilities from any one moment in time.
Only.
And if they're willing to just hold on to that concept, limitations will wash away and they'll be able to see they'll be able to go behind the curtain and see, you know, the professor moving in Oz there where it's all smoke and mirrors and that they are at the controls. Mm. And by taking back control and taking the time to mentally move into that inner space, they can create and change the life that they have and build the type of life they deserve.
There you go. How to be your own wizard in the Oz of your life. Thank you so much, Patrick, for being here with us today. You've brought a lot of excellent information to the listeners, and I want to thank you so much for your time.
Okay, I appreciate you having me.
And everybody, keep living a life without limits.